All right, so ready? Five,
Four,
four,
three,
three,
two,
two,
one.
one. That was
You
the worst.
slowed down as we got
Well, because I
closer.
was waiting for you.
Oh,
right, anyway. Okay, all right, we're starting the podcast. Here we go.
man. A lot of people come at me.
Hey, how's everybody doing? Welcome to Drupal Easy Podcast number 164. My name is Mike Anello, and joining me today is Ted Bowman. How's it going, Ted?
It's going good. Thanks for having me on.
Any cavities this morning at the dentist?
No, clear bill of health.
Wow, fantastic.
Either
And the
that,
braces and your retainer, all that stuff's working out
yeah,
okay?
that's getting off soon. So I
Big
think
day.
I'm sort of thinking my dentist is now just lazy. He just doesn't look very hard.
No, are you like eating a lot of candy and trying to test them? Is that the plan?
No, I just used to have more cavities, and now I never have cavities.
Are you flossing?
I always floss.
Yeah, I floss too.
It's the only New Year's resolution I've ever kept.
And how many years ago did you start that?
Could be a decade.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
You know, flossing is important because every time you floss, all the nasty stuff that like comes out.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, good thing I flossed. Otherwise, that half a cookie is still going to be in my mouth all night.
So that's all we wanted to cover on the podcast, right? Are we done?
No, actually, are you a morning flosser or an evening flosser?
I meant for the whole podcast. It was just about flossing,
Oh, pretty much. Our dental hygiene episode. There's not really anything else going on.
No.
Right.
Evening.
Evening, yeah, I think that's the only way to go. I don't really see the point of morning flossing.
Unless you have a dentist appointment in the morning, in which case I also floss this morning.
Oh, so you're just, it's like you're putting on your best suit to go see the dentist.
Got to.
Best foot forward.
Well, it's embarrassing if they find food in there.
It's kind of their job, though, isn't it? No, I do the same thing. I floss before the dentist. And I go, it sounds like you and I are on the same wavelength here because I like my dentist appointment like first thing in the morning.
Yep.
Yeah, like if my dentist would see me at like 5 a.m., I would be all about that.
Don't know
Just
about
get
that.
it, just get it over with.
Yeah.
All right, so our guest today, Paul Johnson. Paul, how are you?
I'm really good.
You are, and correct me if I'm wrong, although you've already looked at all this stuff, so hopefully we're gonna be right on. You are the Drupal director for CTI Digital, which is a are you guys Drupal an exclusively Drupal agency?
No, we specialize in open source software, primarily Drupal, but we also do Magento. We do some Grails development and some custom PHP development too.
Okay, and you guys are based, you're somewhere in the UK. Where in the UK?
Yeah, we're up in the north of England in Manchester. That's our base, but we do most of our business down either in London. We also have some clients over in the USA too.
Okay, and
So.
is it a virtual company or is everybody in Manchester?
No, we kind of bucked the trend, I suppose. We've got I think it's 73 staff now. We're all in Manchester, although
Wow.
we are whilst there's a lot of discussion around the sort of distributed teams, we think that it works really well. All of the team kind of bounce ideas off each other. It's quite a positive and supportive environment that we have here. And being in one place, you can have those cooler chats. And we're really into things like we've got a big pool table and like a social area where people can hang out. And it's a really nice atmosphere we've got here.
So is it all homegrown talent or are you like relocating people to Manchester to fill your talent needs?
It's a bit of a mix.
Yeah.
I think we experienced a similar situation as most Drupal shops where, the majority of the really, really good developers are either working for us or are working for some of our friendly competitors, and we don't like to upset that. And so we have started to recruit people who have the core skills And also the right sort of attitude, you know, personal attitude, being really passionate and, having that sort of open source mindset and kind of bringing them up through the ranks. But we're also starting, we're going to take on two Drupal apprentices. There's been an apprenticeship scheme that's been run successfully over the last year in London. And so we're supporting the second base of Drupal apprenticeships up in Manchester now, along with some of our peers. So that's a really exciting step.
That's outstanding. And do you floss in the morning or the evening?
You didn't actually ask if he flosses. That'd be the first
full question. Full declaration, I'm really scared of the dentist, so I try and avoid him like the plague.
Well, I mean, I think it's okay to be scared of the dentist. I think it's like a necessary evil, though. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so you're not here to talk about dentistry or...
Well, you should get Ryan Schrammer on the call, because he's a big fan, actually. I've heard him talk about that topic before.
Yeah, we should definitely get him back on. We haven't had him on for a while. We could do a whole dentistry podcast. That would be outstanding. But your role, what we have you on the podcast for today, it's great timing with the Drupal 8 release just around the corner, is you are a volunteer for the Drupal Association, for the marketing team of the Drupal Association, heavily involved in the Drupal Association's social media presence. Kind of give us the overview, like what are your, in very broad strokes, what are your roles for the DA?
Yeah, I suppose the idea came from originally from DrupalCon, in that they have track chairs, who are global track chairs, who are kind of this constance between conferences. They kind of learn the ropes and pass their knowledge between conferences. And originally, I became involved in DrupalCon through DrupalCon London, and I started to provide that kind of constant role in the social media promotion of DrupalCon, and really it's grown from there. I enjoy it, and more as time has passed, I've taken on more responsibilities, really kind of filled the void that didn't seem to be anyone else stepping up on the social media. And we can perhaps talk about why I think that's so important later on.
Well, was there anybody else before you, or are you the first global social media lead?
I am, yeah. There had been a number of people who had contributed in the past. I think Laura Scott, Carrie Gordon is involved with the Facebook side of things, but there wasn't really anybody who... George DeMet, for example, had written a document back in DrupalCon Chicago, which was really helpful. But it kind of, people picked it up and then they put it back down again. And I think since 2011, I've kind of been that heartbeat, really, I suppose. And I haven't done it all by myself. There have been a number of volunteers, which particularly on the DrupalCon side, have helped to infuse the kind of the local spirit of the host city. So people like Alex Lagunen, Pedro Cambra, and Christina in Barcelona, Baris Wanscher in Amsterdam. They've all, under my stewardship, kind of made it their own, I suppose, which has been really successful.
So we're talking about the are we mainly talking about the Drupal Twitter account and the DrupalCon and DrupalCon Europe? Yeah, which accounts are we talking about that you're heavily involved with?
So there is this kind of conscious separation between what the Drupal Association does and the accounts that I tend to nurture. So I handle all the DrupalCon accounts. Originally, that was just DrupalCon at DrupalCon, but now we've divided them into several accounts so that we can make the presence more segmented. So we have DrupalCon EUR, which is for Europe. We have DrupalCon NA, which is for the North American DrupalCon, and DrupalCon Asia, which is for the upcoming DrupalCon in Mumbai. And the idea is that these are kind of like, I suppose, the Olympic torch, where it's an asset that we grow over time and we pass between conferences. And having these separate accounts means that we can be a bit more noisy on those individual accounts, but we still have this DrupalCon account, which is for very significant announcements. But then from that, there didn't seem to be, I noticed no one was really looking after the Drupal account, and it seemed like this huge opportunity which was Drupal was missing. So I spoke to the Drupal Association and volunteered to take that on, and it's gone from one thing to the next, where it's a bit of a dangerous thing, really, to take on board, really, because every time you send a message, you are sending it out to tens of thousands of people. And I always feel like you make one mistake and it goes well and no one thanks you, but you make one mistake and then everyone flames you. So
yeah, it's pretty much a thankless job.
I don't believe that's the case. I mean, really wonderful things have happened because, off the back of it, most people don't realize that it's me that's doing it, but I get a lot of satisfaction out of it. But it does come with this every single tweet, particularly on the Drupal Twitter account, which has got now it's over 60,000 followers, which includes journalists and government staff, decision makers and influencers. It's got CTOs, charities, you name it. Every time I schedule or post a tweet, I do think about a couple of minutes before I fire it out.
Well, I was saying it was thankless in exactly the way that you were mentioning, that the only time you probably get feedback is if there's a mistake.
It can be that way, yeah.
So let me ask you about the content that actually goes out on the at Drupal Twitter account. Is that content that you're coming up with, or is that content where the DA is emailing you and saying, hey, let's get some tweets scheduled about this, or are they coming from the community? Where does the information come from, and what's your process to curate that and figure out what and when is going to go out?
Yeah. So working on the success that I had with the DrupalCon account, where I actually wrote my own social media policy and got the Drupal Association to just look at it. I developed a kind of a personality for the account. I did the same for the Drupal account, where it is we, the Drupal Association, and it's very much a broadcast mechanism. I wrote a policy which you can find. There's a thing called the Drupal Social Media Request Form, which is at drupal.org/social-media. And on that, there is a policy which I wrote kind of to protect myself, really, from people wanting to coerce me to post stuff. And it really talks around the fact that anything that goes out on the Drupal Twitter account should be for the good of Drupal. Overall, that's what it should be about. So it should be significant news. It should be used to promote positive articles about Drupal that maybe are in the news or in the media. Maybe things like the Drupal 6 end of life post. So there are lots of sort of insular things. But it's also, I wanted to make it so that it was celebrating individuals every so often. So maybe shining a light on some one person that's done something really amazing. And I wanted it to also be more reflective of the global nature of Drupal. There has been a history of perhaps North America and Europe being rather good at promoting themselves, and perhaps the less mature communities, less developed communities around the world weren't really getting a look in. So I'll be honest, I have kind of positively discriminated towards those areas. So India and Africa and South America. And so as far as, to answer your question, where does the content come from? That's a combination of sources. The Drupal Association looking out for stuff. I'm always on the hunt on Twitter and looking in Google. So I've got various alerts going. And every so often a little nugget comes up. I might meet people at conferences as well. And so it's kind of the eyes and ears. I do feed through to Lee Carver, the content writer at the Drupal Association, when I find a real gem. So that she can kind of make something more of it before we announce it. So there's quite a few good examples. For instance, I discovered this thing called Bart's Bash, which is a world record sailing attempt where they're trying to get as many people as possible onto the water on one 24-hour period. And it turned out it was on Drupal. So we wrote, Lee wrote this really nice article about that, and then we put it out. So it's kind of a there's a lot of things go on, I suppose. And I also found out about this thing going on in Africa, where there's an organization helping youth to rise from poverty using Drupal and Joomla. They lift a container into sort of impoverished areas, which has got a computer suite in it. It's called CamperBits. And they teach people how to use content management systems. So,
what's the best way if someone has, you know, something that they think should, you know, should garner some attention on the Drupal account? What's the best way to get that information to you? Is it using that social media form?
Yeah, so that's easy.
Or maybe just, you know, tweet something and add, you know, at Drupal to it? Or
no, I definitely would use the social media request form.
Okay.
If you go to drupal.org, at the bottom left-hand corner, there's actually a directory of social media directory. That's really helpful for, there are all of the accounts, the official ones, which are related to Drupal, and on there is a link to the social media form.
We'll have that link in the...
Reaches myself, and it also reaches the Drupal Association.
So how do you like define, there's, you know, 60,000 followers, that's obviously a lot. Like, how are you looking at success and how's that grown over time? Are you looking at like retweets and stuff like that?
Yeah. I think getting outside of Drupal's echo chamber, mm-hmm. it's not just a case of how many mentions we get. Yeah. It's just, you know, the usual suspects. I don't really think that's what the Drupal Twitter account's about. Mm-hmm. So if we get some mentions by other open source people, or it's traction into people who are writing about Drupal in newspapers, online newspapers or blogs, and it does boil down to ultimately the number of retweets we get. I don't think anyone can do that enough, where we only have so much of an audience. And if everyone in Drupal were to occasionally retweet the Drupal account on something which they're interested in, we're getting access to, the project is getting access to your followers. And some of those followers are outside of what we normally reach. I suppose that's where, you know, the success lies. I think it's a great success when I see somebody rising through the ranks. I think Kathy Taze is a good example where, she's just absolutely come from nowhere and she's just pure dynamite. And, you know, I noticed her quite a long time ago, being very passionate on Twitter. So I try and use Twitter to, draw attention to these people. And that, to me, that's where success comes. There's another good example where there was a crowdsourcing campaign. I'm just trying to find the details. There was a guy in Italy who tweeted out that he was looking for crowdsourced funding to get to DrupalCon Portland. And at first I thought, well, this is a little bit crazy. This guy wants 10,000 euros to get there. And but when I looked into it, I discovered that actually what he wanted was, he was blind and he wanted to go to help with the sprints on the accessibility. And so I thought, yeah, actually, this is... Oh, and he needed to have someone to help him get to Portland because he had a vision, no vision. And suddenly it seemed like to make sense, and through social media we drew a lot of attention to it, and within 24 hours he'd got his money, and I think that's a great success.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. I remember hearing about that.
Mm.
So it sounds like, you know, you're approaching these accounts as a way to inform the community, but it seems like there's definitely an effort on your part to reach outside the community as well. How does this compare, do you see, you know, these social media accounts replacing what Drupal Planet does? I've always been a very faithful Drupal Planet reader, you know, that sometime every day I go to, you know, Drupal Planet and my RSS reader and go through all those. Are they the same? Are they serving different masters? How do you see how those two compare?
So you're hooked on the drug, aren't you? You are totally...
I'm mainlining. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah. So it's in... You have a habit. You formed a habit where you go to Drupal Planet, and that's what I do every day as well. And most of us do. But someone who... someone who doesn't even know about Drupal would never occur to them to go there. And I'm hoping that the social media channels, through using a dynamic range of hashtags and different terminology and phraseology, we might hook into a conversation elsewhere or searches, and people would suddenly discover this Drupal thing, just like many of us did back in the day. And suddenly there's this kind of serendipity happens. And I suppose that's... So this is not the same, no. And I can't keep abreast of all of the things that are happening. It's really much more for the significant things that happen. It would be too noisy otherwise.
We've been focusing in on the Twitter accounts. Mm. Are the Twitter accounts like 80% of, you think, the social media reach of Drupal, or are the Facebook and Google Plus and other social media accounts just as active?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that so Carrie Gordon largely handles the Facebook side of things. I do put things onto Facebook. I have access to it. And there's a DrupalCon Facebook. There's also it's worthwhile pointing out that we have the Drupal Association has a YouTube channel, which they use to publish session recordings, and wherever possible, I try and promote any camps that have published recordings, because I see that as a really important thing for allowing. Not everyone can go to these camps or cons. They either can't afford to, or their personal circumstances. Maybe they don't really want to leave their family for the weekend or the week. And it's a way of bringing those events to people, and the live streaming as well. And we also have Flickr accounts for a lot of the events. And I think, visibly expressed in Drupal, there's this rich stream of fabulous photographs that people have taken at Drupal events and Drupal cons now. So they're being used things like the Drupal Watchdog and the association blog posts, and because they're all Creative Commons license, anyone can tap into those images to kind of help promote Drupal. I kind of feel that, and the evidence seems to be the case, that there's very high engagement levels on Twitter, but we mustn't disregard Facebook at all. There's a very large audience there, and because we're a global project, not everyone does the same thing in each country or place. So, and then again, because it's a voluntary thing, there's only so much I can do, and I'd rather do what I do well. If somebody wants to pick up on the Google Plus, then I'd love to see that happen.
So speaking of stuff you're doing well, it seems like the Celebrate D8 is really taking off. Mike wrote some notes here about the @Celebrate8 and the hashtag. Is there an actual Celebrate D8 account, or is it just the hashtag?
Yeah, there's an account. It's @CelebrateD. Celebrate with a number 8, so a D8. And there's also going to be a website which should go live late this week or early next week. It's a celebrate the word Drupal and then 8 the number .com. And that's kind of a personal project which I've recruited quite a few people into, some willing volunteers. So Jeffrey Maguire and I have calibrated on the kind of the concept, and we wanted it. It's going to be a bit of a social media stunt. I don't think it's ever been done in the world. So Some people may have seen, and 200 people have volunteered. There's at least one person every time zone in the world, and they're poised ready to join in with this on social media. But the whole idea of it is we're literally just sending out right now invites to about 900 people around the world, asking them to record YouTube videos, which a short kind of description of why these people, their personal tale of why they're so excited about Drupal 8, what it means to them. And they're all going to get published on this Celebrate Drupal 8 website, and they'll be released over the 24-hour period that after Drupal 8 gets released. And it's going to follow the sun. So as dawn breaks in every single country in the world, there is going to be a video from that country, from that time zone, or multiple ones that are very personal accounts of what Drupal 8 means to these people. I think it's quite an exciting experiment, and I think it'd be pretty, the way that Drupal is, it'd be difficult for anyone else to replicate it.
Wow. Do you do anything else?
Well, that's the thing. If you sort of ignite enthusiasm in people, you spread the load.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, I think Dries has got I once heard him say that he has a fascination with scalability. I think he's managed to scale himself, and I suppose I heard him say that, and I've drawn on that from a lot, mm-hmm. Many times where. If I can spend an hour doing something which inspires 10 people, then that's an hour well spent, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so, with this whole idea, it's not just the Celebrate Drupal 8 thing. Everything I do, I'm thinking, well, how can I draw more people into to do this? And a lot of people do Drupal, and if people more often realised the power of the community. We could move forward much faster.
And you're looking for volunteers to help with the accounts?
I'm always would welcome an approach from anyone, particularly with the DrupalCon. DrupalCon's a year now. That's a huge task. It's an impossible task for one person to do. So, it's the open source way to sharing and generous with your knowledge. And if I got run over by a bus tomorrow, you could pick up the document that I've written and someone else could take over. And it's not something I want to be greedy with, not at all. So
I want to bring up a couple other things that you were involved with around the time of DrupalCon Barcelona, which a lot of people thought were really cool. Is you were the person who actually generated those username clouds of Drupal 8 contributors, as well as I'm sorry?
I'll say that's exactly right.
Yeah, so you did one was it the top 1,000 Drupal 8 contributors?
Yeah, well, it was 1,000 because I had to have a tag cloud that could support PDF, so that I could print it so large.
Right.
And the one I found, its maximum was 1,000, unfortunately, whilst I know there's 3,800. Away from what they've done.
Yeah, and then it was great because at DrupalCon Barcelona, you printed out this giant, I don't know what else to call it, but a floor mat.
Yeah.
Probably what?
That's like a floor decal, I suppose you call it.
Okay.
And that's precisely what I'm thinking about, I don't really think that a Drupal shop, it's not about the Drupal shop when they sponsor DrupalCon, really. I quite like it's someone like almost like a benevolent act, really, to just to celebrate them, that all the people who have helped with Drupal 8. But I'd hoped in the past when we've done social media competitions, never really had any traction. But for some reason, it seems to have hit a nerve with people, and really they loved it. And without saying anything, people were just consciously just going in and taking a photograph and sharing it on social media, which was exactly what I wanted people to do. And it was almost when I watched from a distance what people were doing, it was very interesting because it was almost like hallowed turf. No one would stand on it. it was a very, very special thing, and I suppose it is really. And then it also pulled out the competitive edge of people, because the size of the name is proportional to the contributions that they've made. So there was obviously a lot of interesting exchanges going around about it.
So, Mike, don't be humble. Are you in here?
I am in there, yes.
Which quadrant?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
Oh, come on. You've looked for yourself.
I did, but I don't remember where it was. Okay. You know, I'm in there somewhere.
All right.
Another thing, and then following on from that, after the event, there were so many people asking for a printable version, so I published the PDF, but then so maybe they printed, put it on the wall, but I also did one which was by country, and I kind of normalized it, so if you were from a highly populated country, we kind of refactored it, so... Yeah, if there were lots of population, then, and there weren't that many contributors, then that country wasn't quite so big, and it painted an interesting picture, which I think was a bit controversial. There was a lot of discussion on Twitter about it, but it drew a lot of conversation. Which I guess, going back to what you're saying, how do you measure success? If people are engaging, and maybe it's making people think, and hopefully maybe it inspired a few more people to put a few more commits in and help to get Drupal 8 across the line. I don't know, but yeah, if it did that, then no one will ever know, but it was a bit of fun as well.
Yeah, we'll have links to both of those in the show notes as well.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
So, outstanding. All right, so I think we've covered everything. Paul, did we cover everything that you wanted to cover when it comes to social media and Drupal?
I think in a nutshell, that's what it's about, yeah.
All right, well, let's move on then. You're going to hang out for the rest of the podcast. And so let me cover some Drupal Easy news really quick. We're actually wrapping up our fall 2015 session of Drupal Career Online, which is our 12-week Drupal training class. This is we're currently in week 11. So next week we will graduate yet another class, which I think will be our 7th or 8th class. I really need to go back and actually count. But don't worry if you're interested in this class. Our next class is scheduled to start on March 7th after the new year. So you can go to drupaleasy.com/DCO for all of the information about that, or contact me directly and I can get you whatever information you are looking for. I also want to thank the folks up at Drupal Camp Chattanooga. Lee Walker and the rest of the organizing team put on a great camp. I was up there over the weekend. Exactly what a Drupal camp should be. They had, you know, really good sessions and food and a few get-togethers and just a really nice time. And I just want to thank them for inviting me up there to give the keynote. I got some pretty good response, and that's always great, and some good discussion that came out of it. So I want to thank those guys. Then I want to mention something that I'm sure Paul has put out on social media. The Drupal Association is having a membership drive through the end of the year. They're looking to raise $100,000, and more importantly, I think, is gain 1,000 new members in the Drupal Association. This is hugely important. If you're listening to this podcast and you earn money from Drupal, then you should absolutely be a member of the Drupal Association. It's fairly inexpensive. I think, I don't have it in front of me, what is it, like $30 a month? No, $30 a year, I believe.
I think you can choose how much. There's a slider.
Oh, is there a slider? Okay. Well, it's not that much at all. It's kind of a no-brainer. And that money goes directly to keeping Drupal.org up and running, keeping the Git repositories up and running, you know, just all of the infrastructure that's involved with Drupal. That money, you know, goes directly to supporting that infrastructure. So definitely check that out. Go to association.drupal.org. And if you're not a member, please join. And Ted will send you a tote bag.
Yeah.
Right, Ted?
Yeah. I have some spare tote bags from various grocery stores that I'll send you.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Now that I think about it, I have two boxes full of Florida Drupal Camp bags. They're like the reusable cloth grocery bags. I don't know how much this is going to end up costing me, but I'll say if you join, if you're listening to this podcast and you join the Drupal Association, contact me and I will actually send you out one or two of those bags. So you can get a tote bag.
Wow.
How about that? How much will this cost me in postage? I don't
know. I hope it costs you a fortune.
It could cost me a fortune. But then again, I could say I only have three bags and then I'm
I encourage.
No, I've got a lot of bags.
I encourage people from far off lands to contact Mike.
No one for, okay, hold on. Yeah, let's put some caveats here. Antarctica, no, you can come pick up the bag in Florida. The weather is, you know, much nicer here. Yeah, no, but I'll send out some bags. Absolutely. I'd love to get them out of my garage. That would be fantastic. All right, so let's move on to three stories. The news we've all been waiting for, Drupal 8 will be released on November 19th, 2015. Paul, who won the office pool on that one? Did you guys have a pool going on the release date?
I was looking back on my blog the other day, and I said early 2014.
I think we were all way off. It's been, it will have been 1,779 days since Drupal 7's release. It has been 113 Drupal Easy podcast episodes. And we're on 164. So the majority of our podcast has taken place, you know, getting ready for Drupal 8. There's a really cool Drupal 8 preview slideshow. I actually gave an extra presentation at Drupal Camp Chattanooga using this slideshow. It's a slideshow that's been built and is maintained by the community all about Drupal 8 and what's coming and the new features in Drupal 8. So for me, it's a no-brainer. If you attend a Drupal meetup or if you're attending a Drupal camp, you know, volunteer to give a new presentation using this slideshow. It's easy. The slideshow is done. And it's a great way to get the discussion going about Drupal 8 and to see some of the new features. I looked at the slideshow for the first time about 2 days before I gave the presentation. I ran through the slideshow, you know, 8-9 times before the presentation. And giving the presentation, it ended up being more of a discussion than a presentation. Because as we would go between slides, we talk about this or that, and people get excited about something, ask questions. I'd pop over to a live demo. We check it out. Just the easiest way to get people excited about Drupal 8 is to actually show them what's coming and be able to demo it. And if you're in a meetup group, it seems like a no-brainer to me. Every meetup group should be doing a Drupal 8 presentation coming soon. We'll have plenty of Drupal 8 news in upcoming podcasts. So I think for now, is there anything more we need to say other than thank goodness it'll be here in a little over a week?
If you're not following an account, I've got one called Drupal 8. Is coming. That's one. Drupal 8 is coming. That's got tons of content about Drupal 8 on.
All right. Ted, what's the first thing you're going to do on November 19th?
Well, obviously not floss because I do that at night.
Right.
I'm debating whether I want to go down to the New York party.
Yeah, that's a haul for you.
Yeah, but I haven't been down there in a while anyways.
Yeah. We're having, actually, I believe we're having two in Florida. We're having one in South Florida and one in Orlando. It works out great. It worked out great because there's an annual open source conference that takes place in Orlando called FacetCon every year. And it's actually that weekend. So the folks at FacetCon are actually giving us a room to have a party. We're going to have a Drupal trivia. We're going to have games and all kinds of fun stuff. So if you're in the Central Florida area.
One of the things I've posted was don't just sit back and wait for someone to organize a celebration for you. I mean, not everyone lives near a major population.
Yeah.
Just organize one yourself and see if you can get two or three people together. It'd be amazing to see Drupal logos over the whole world, not just in the major cities.
Yeah, and it can be as simple as, you know, just meet up for you know, snacks and beverages somewhere or go to a meal. It doesn't have to be, you know, anything, you know, or all that organized. But it's a great way to celebrate and to help spread the word about Drupal 8.
Absolutely.
All right, so I'm going to move on to story number three. Then I'm going to come back to story number two, although no one else can see the rundown except for us. So as far as everybody else is concerned, this is story number two. And it's almost more of a pick of the week, so it's going to be pretty quick. I did want to point out a really, really useful blog post by one of our co-hosts, Ryan Price, who wasn't able to make the podcast today. He posted a great blog post on the FFW website. The link will be in the show notes, of course. On Drupal 8 services, dependency injection, and decoupling your code. And those of you that have been listening to the podcast know that one of Ryan's strengths is being able to create wonderful analogies, being able to talk about something very technical in very approachable terms using a clever analogy. And this is exactly what he did in this blog post. Talking about service containers and services and dependency injection. So if you are just now getting ramped up with Drupal 8 development, then this is pretty much a no-brainer article that you should probably just go and check out and just, read and reflect and just kind of bask in it. It's really well written, and just want a shout-out to Ryan. So, Ted, have you read that one yet?
I scanned through it. Yeah, it's really good. It's definitely something that is good to learn, because you'll be using services, and oftentimes probably if you're doing a contrib module, you probably want to define a service. So
yeah, there's a bunch of sample code in there. I believe it was something about a TiVo, not a TiVo, like a set top box, like a Roku box or an Apple TV, is the service container. And then the various streaming services are the services. So really cool stuff. Okay, so next story. Perhaps my favorite story of all time. It's by Steve Burge, a blog post over on OS Training about goodbye web form. Contact forms are in Drupal 8 core. And I love this story because, well, for a couple of reasons. Number one, it says goodbye web form. And it doesn't say goodbye web form and entity form. I'm sorry, Ted.
That's a good thing, right? Goodbye.
Well, in a way, though,
he does mention
Steve is declaring war against Ted Bowman.
Yeah.
That's the way I'm looking at this.
That's usually most, right. I'd say 1/4 of all Drupal articles are kind of like that.
Yeah. So the deal is that contact forms in Drupal 8 are entities, and they're fieldable entities.
Yeah.
So you can create forms in Drupal 8 without the need for web form or, I'm sorry, Ted, e-form in Drupal 8, e-form. Yeah. And there's a couple caveats there, and this is where we're going to, right now we're knocking Ted down, but we're going to build Ted back up in a second. You can create forms, add fields to those forms, collect data in Drupal 8 core without any other contributed modules. The issue I won't even say issue, but they're limited to when that form is submitted. The only thing that happens to the form data is it gets emailed. It does not get saved. Is this correct, Ted?
Yeah. But apparently they're trying to get some changes into 8.1. There's a
Are you doing your best to block those changes?
No, I'd help if I had time. But yeah, so right now there's a module called Context Storage, which just saves them. I'm not sure how it saves them, just probably as some sort of entity. And then they have a bunch of things in 8.1 as far as doing aliases and having storage in core. And I think storage would be optional. And I forget what else, but yeah, a few other things they're going to try to get into 8.1.
All right, so let's call this kind of like lightweight entity form.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a very simple, way to build forms. And, I hesitate to even use the word collect user data because it's not really collecting in the database anywhere. It's just kind of sending it off via email, which is great. I mean, that's a great for people who want to get a D8 site out, soon. That's kind of a great alternative. But modules like WebForm, and I think, Ted, I've asked you about this, but not on the podcast. Are you aware, is there a D8 port of WebForm?
There is, and people are intending to do it. And they're not as far as my understanding is, they're not really overhauling it. It's going to be kind of a straight port of the Drupal 7 version. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they're taking advantage of some of the D8 stuff they could do, like Webform components would be a good match for a plugin type. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they're doing that. But that may be in the plans. But they're definitely not. They're definitely keeping the different kind of storage, not the sort of entity based storage. So yeah, but I don't know what the. I definitely don't think it'll be done in the next 2 weeks, obvious, or whenever Drupal 8 comes out.
All right, so let's talk about your baby, which is in Drupal 7 it's called Entity Form, and in Drupal 8 it's now called eForm. Yeah. Kind of a full featured alternative to these forms in core. Can you give us an update on eForm for Drupal 8?
Yeah, so eForm is pretty much just going to be a port of Drupal 7, but there may be a couple things added, like the ability to have different form modes, because Drupal 8 has form modes, but I think only the user entity is actually taking advantage of it. So they maybe have different form modes for like submission and draft and stuff like that. Besides that, right now I'm just focused on porting it. Maybe not adding the rules integration, because rules isn't done. But it's going to actually probably be a lot easier than, or a lot less code, more files, but less code than the Drupal 7 version, because more of the stuff like into the API made in core, obviously. I want to look at what they're planning on for the contact module, because I don't want to keep eForm going just to keep it going. They're not having the ability, as far as I know, for drafts and for different redirects on forms, and not quite as many like options for overriding all the different text parts of the form. So I'll probably.
This sounds like an olive branch, Ted. It sounds like your arms are open and you're.
Well, I don't know if it would make sense to have everything in eForm in core. I mean, maybe it would. But right now what they're doing is, it's sort of more sticking towards like the contact, but I guess with the aliases and being able to have them fieldable, you could make them for a lot of different kinds of stuff.
So let me just thinking off the top of my head, could you see in the future where eForm kind of ceases to be a standalone thing, but rather it just adds additional functionality to core contact forms?
I was just thinking, I was just thinking about that recently, whether I would want to do that. I haven't talked to them about that at all, but.
Was it while you were hopped up on laughing gas this morning?
Is it that crazy of an idea? I thought about that. That's one possibility, to just like add additional stuff to contact forms that wouldn't necessarily make sense for, 90% of the cases. So it wouldn't make sense to go into core.
Someone landing on a plane on your house.
I put a helicopter pad in the other day.
That's very handy.
Yeah, I've been saving up for the helicopter for a while though.
But you're putting the pad in first.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Because I have other friends with helicopters. So
seems very reasonable.
Yeah, so that's okay. One thought is to just make it add additions to contact module. I mean, that would definitely make it be a lot less code, which would be nice. But I'm not sure.
Yeah. All right, so let's put a bow on this little discussion. Yeah. Contact forms in Drupal 8 core, kind of a great way to collect user data if you need to launch a Drupal 8 site in the short term.
Yeah.
And then eForm, web form, we're not sure about. It looks like there's progress being made. eForm, what's the status? Can someone use eForm, or at least a limited version of eForm?
Yeah, they can definitely use a limited eForm version if they don't need the things I haven't finished yet. So there's a bunch of stuff in there. Not everybody's using all the parts of it. So,
okay. But it does get them – the advantage of using eForm today over core contact forms is the database storage.
And the draftability. Like if it's just the database storage, then I would say use the contact storage one.
Oh, okay.
But if you need like draftability and redirects, custom redirects and stuff like that, then I would say eForm is the way. And I'm not saying I'm definitely going to be able to get it done by launch of G8, but it's a possibility. It's pretty close.
All right.
And I would say, in the future, though, I think where WebForms is really good is if you need to hand off the ability to make forms to your clients. Like, that's not eForm or contact form is probably not a good match for that. So there's not really, a good solution for that when I think now when D8 is launching, there's not necessarily a good solution for that.
Yet.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Very good. All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Ted. Let's move on and say a word about webenabled.com, our longtime sponsor, and their companion product, devpanel.com. DevPanel is cPanel for developers, and webenabled.com is a place to host your Git repositories and host development and production Drupal sites. One of the things about webenabled that we haven't talked about in a while is the ability to go to their marketplace, where you can, with a click of a few clicks of their website, you can install various distributions of Drupal, various versions of Drupal, as well as various other content management systems. So if you are curious about other content management systems, or maybe a client has said, hey, do you know anything about, WordPress, or do you know anything about, something else, it's an easy way to get up and running on a server in just a few minutes to check it out. So check those out at webenabled.com and devpanel.com. Ted, let's come right back to you for your pick of the week.
So there's a proposal by Webchick Angie Byron for D8 contrib office hours. So kind of an extension of core office hours. So for people who are wanting to port their contrib modules, some volunteers. It looks like a lot of right now core contributors are volunteering some time to be there to answer questions. So obviously, there's a lot of changes to D8. Like, it's a different, whole different way of programming. So it'll be nice to have people there to ask questions. Though, I think right now, I just ask questions in the Drupal contrib. Because, that's what Drupal contrib is for, anything that's going to end up on Drupal.org. But it'll be nice to have a specific time where people are, sort of sitting there waiting to answer questions about helping you port your modules.
And it makes it easier for people to ask those questions if they know that they're not, it's a designated time. Yeah. People are there waiting to answer questions rather than afraid that they just throw a question out there. They might be interrupting someone or,
Yeah, but I think in general, it is... I think this is a great initiative, but I think also people need to, or it's good if people understand that Drupal contrib is for, what is it? Drupal pound contribute is for core and for contrib. Cause you don't see a lot of contrib questions on there, but
not lately haven't.
Yeah. But the idea is that it's for any code that's going to go back on Drupal.org.
Right. Very good point. Very good point.
So Mike, what about your pick of the week?
So my pick of the week is a blog post called How We Made the Toast. And the Toast is a website, the-toast.net. And it's a really great – it's actually a series of articles about the redesign of the Toast website. You can find them at responsivewebdesign.com/toast. And it's not even really Drupal related other than Jeff Eaton was involved in the content strategy. And it's a series of articles talking about the redesign of this website. They stayed on WordPress. It went from one, it stayed on WordPress, but it was a complete redesign of the user interface as well as, the information architecture and some of the taxonomy and things like that. Really well written, for me, it was one of those articles that made me stop and think about how I approach redesign projects like this. Really just crammed full of good information. So it's one of those articles, I think, if you're involved in information architecture and designing Drupal sites on the back end or from an information architecture standpoint, it's almost a must read. So check that one out.
So on a related note, I had toast this morning.
Yes. Did you? Before or after you flossed?
Before, yeah.
Before you flossed. Toast with your gourmet coffee?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Sounds like a big morning for you, Ted.
Yeah.
Kind of jealous.
I should probably go, yes, go to sleep right after this.
That's it. Your day's over.
So we've got something in common now, because I can't exist without toast or a coffee, wherever I am in the world. I'm not sophisticated, but that's what I like.
Are you a coffee snob?
Oh yes.
Oh, see, you and Ted. Here's another podcast right here.
Yeah. I like Ithaca. I think it corresponds to places that have very little light have very good coffee. We have very little light.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Well, I got my snobbery from New Zealand.
Okay.
I lived in New Zealand for about 3 years. I came back a wine and a coffee snob.
Ithaca made me one.
As much as I would love to hear the rest of this conversation. Paul, your picks of the week.
Yeah. I got wind of this back at DrupalCon Amsterdam, but it's been built out reasonably quick. The BBC Worldwide new e-commerce website, store.bbc.com, has just gone live. I think it's mostly been built by an in-house team. It's really significant because the BBC is a well-known worldwide organization, highly respected, and they've chosen Drupal as their e-commerce platform to sell on-demand and download their huge back catalog. I think it's a really nice looking site as well. Certainly the BBC in the UK are kind of on the curve with being innovative as well. So I'm hoping that off the back of them signaling that Drupal is a good platform, that maybe others will follow. So I'd definitely encourage people to take a look. It's a really fascinating site, and they can draw a lot of traffic as well. They've got some, you know, Doctor Who and Top Gear and lots of, you know, very well known titles on sale there. Yeah, David Attenborough's back catalog. It's obviously quite a complex system underneath the hood.
So our North American readers or listeners may have to find a proxy to visit this. Apparently it's blocked here.
Really?
Yeah,
that's not much fun, is it?
There's a link to say find out why. Well, luckily you have two picks of the week, and hopefully we have listeners all around the world.
Yeah, my second one is there's a... an agency, a Drupal shop called, and I apologize if I get this wrong, but a Colono. They've got a Celebrate Drupal 8 website that's going up. It's up now, and it's all hinged around Instagram. So they're encouraging people to hashtag Celebrate D8 with any images that they want to post on Instagram when Drupal 8 gets released. And there's this really nice sort of social media wall. So all good stuff to them for stepping up to do that. That's one of the really nice things about Drupal. You kind of plant a seed and then people, you know, make something of it beyond what you originally imagined. So yeah, really good.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool site. I like that. That's a great idea. We'll definitely be using that at our party for sure.
I think it's moderated as well. So
so don't try to get any naughty pictures on there, Mike. Come on.
So I'm saying.
Exactly. All right. Fair warning. Be clever, apparently. All right. So upcoming events. Let's just reiterate one more time. Drupal 8 launch parties on and around November 19th next week. There's, as I mentioned, there's one here in Central Florida. Ted is going to hop on a Greyhound bus and head down to New York City, hopefully. Are you guys having one in Manchester?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't actually know the details, but there's Mike Bell is organising that with Phil Norton. So I don't even know if they'll be able to come because they'll be so busy doing the social media. But
all right, well, very good. There's really only one event coming up in the next. I shouldn't say that because there might be other camps and stuff. Yeah. But clearly, the event. Go ahead, Paul.
I was to say, if people didn't realise, DrupalCal have done a really good. Map of all of the parties, which is growing really, really fast. I think it's like 130 events now.
Yeah, that's great. It's going to be a very, you know, just a nice time for the community to get together and just kind of everyone relax and, you know, exhale and then, you know, look to the next thing. All right, so before we get to our five questions, let's go down our social media accounts real quick. As always, you can find us at Drupal Easy. Our missing co-host this week, Andrew M. Riley, Liberator. That's Andrew and Ryan, of course. Ted, where can people find you?
At Tedbo and at Six Mile Tech on Twitter.
All right. And I am at Ultimike, U-L-T-I-M-I-K-E, pretty much on all social media accounts. We do have an announcement coming up about co-hosts. And for some people, it might be good news. For some people, it might be bad news.
Who would it be?
Not looking at you, Ted.
Who would it be bad?
No, it's not bad news.
It's like you're suggesting I don't like one of the possible co-hosts.
Nobody tell Ryan. Okay? That's all I'm going to say. Let's not mention any of this to Ryan. But we have some fun news in the next few podcasts we'll be sharing. And Paul, where can people find you other than at Drupal?
PD Johnson.
PD Johnson. And then do you tweet very much there, or are you just completely consumed with tweeting on the various Drupal accounts?
Yeah, I do share quite often there. It's mostly Drupal stuff, but I'm quite keen into cycling, and I'm keen on encouraging young people as well. So there's a lot of stuff about that. And, yeah,
very good. And I see you've also have the Celebrate D8. Celebrate. Let me spell this one out because it's a little bit confusing. It's CELEBR8, letter D, number 8. That's Celebrate D8, that account. And then Drupal 8 is coming is the other one you wanted to mention. Correct, Paul?
Yeah, that's good.
All right, very good. So now five questions for you, Paul. This is where we don't want you to think too hard. We're going to ask you five quick questions, and hopefully we'll get five quick answers. And we may have just gotten the answer to the first question that you just mentioned. Name something interesting you do outside of Drupal.
Yeah, keen road cyclist. I live in a really beautiful part of the UK near the Peak District, so it's really, really hilly. It's a mecca for cyclists. I spend most of my time, when I've got any spare time, going up and down the hills there.
Outstanding. Name the last piece of software you installed. And this can be something on your phone. It could be something on your laptop. Could be something on your TV, whatever.
Yeah, I've installed the Slack app on my Mac so that we're ready for the big announcement on Drupal 8. I'll be there ready to press the button.
All right, fantastic. What is a goal that you have not accomplished yet that is terrifying?
Okay. There's this thing called the Étape de Tour, where sort of amateur road cyclists ride a stage of the Tour de France in the French Alps. It's normally got about 5,000 meters of climbing in it, and I would love to do it. But yeah, it's not something to be taken lightly, so...
No, it's funny you say that because I'm a cyclist as well, and a few years ago we had the opportunity to be in the south of France right before the tour. Wow. And one of the things I dragged my family to do was I said, "Oh, let's just drive one of the mountain stages in the Pyrenees," mm-hmm. and doing that like totally got an appreciation for how crazy difficult, you know, riding one of those stages can be.
Yeah.
Crazy beautiful, but just amazingly the amount of elevation change is
yeah, it's quite an amazing physical endeavor, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So Paul, I see you there's a note you do not have an answer for what is the last exotic animal that you've hand fed. Are you not an animal lover?
I just wouldn't choose to feed them.
Yeah, I'm in protest.
I'll leave that
question
to other people.
Yeah. You don't like this question either?
I'll leave that to my daughter. She would do it.
Do you have any pets? Do you have any pets, Paul?
Just an 8-year-old, yeah.
Well, I refuse to write that down as the answer. So we're going to move on. And what was your tipping point Drupal moment? Like, what was the moment for you when you were first starting to get into Drupal where – you realized, wow, this is for me.
Yeah, it's easy, really. I went to DrupalCon Barcelona, and I really enjoyed it. But I came back really fizzing with the enthusiasm. But I kind of had no outlet. And it wasn't really until DrupalCon London, which was 4 years later, where I really found my place. Until then, I didn't really. I felt there were plenty of people doing development that were better than me, or I don't know. I just didn't really find my hook. But then, as I said before, I found a void. There was a void in the space where people weren't promoting Drupal. And so I met Neil Kent, who used to work for Apple, and he really inspired me. He was the director of DrupalCon at the time. And then I met Megan Saniki, who I think is just amazing, and Isabel Schultz, who used to work at the Drupal Association. And she just sent me a tweet that said, "Looks like you want to get more involved." And that was a real pivot point for me. And it really ignited my enthusiasm, and I've never looked back, really. So I think I could thank those three people.
Well, that is a nice story. Very good. So was that when you first started getting involved with the social media stuff, or was that some other involvement?
Yeah, well, Isabel literally just gave me the username and password to the DrupalCon account.
Oh, and then said, there you go.
There you go.
Good luck.
I was like, whoa. So that's kind of where my tale started, and I sort of eased myself in slowly. Yeah. Experimented, right. Made a few mistakes, and I'm still here. So,
fantastic. All right, well, let's wrap things up. As always, you can catch this and all of our 163 previous episodes on DrupalEasy.com/podcast, or just search for Drupal Easy on iTunes, Miro, or any of your other favorite podcast catchers, including Stitcher, I should mention. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail to refute anything that Ted has said, by all means, call area code 321-396-2340. If you're out of the country, just do +1-321-396-2340. If you want to check out what we are tagging during the week as far as potential stories or picks of the week, you can always follow the Drupal Easy Podcast tag on Delicious. Upcoming podcasts, we have Donna Benjamin in 2 weeks, and Mike Bell, who unfortunately we had to reschedule. He was supposed to be on the previous podcast, or we actually missed a podcast between David Rothas and today. So we had to reschedule Mike, but he is rescheduled, and we'll have him on here in a few weeks. So Paul, again, let me say thank you very much for making the time out of your busy schedule to join us today and talk to us all about the Drupal Association and Drupal's social media accounts.
Well, thank you for doing the podcast. It's amazing.
All right. Well, you're welcome for that. Feel free to tweet about it whenever you would like. And Ted, as always, great talking to you. Go get to work on eForm because we're all waiting for it. All right. And we'll see everybody next time on the Drupal Easy Podcast.
Goodbye.
See ya.